Julie Mango. I just want the taste and jam, yo. I don't want the wine and junk, yo. So come let me slam the bamboo and hear what she have a man to. I don't really care, I have to wind up like a crazy wacko. She man watching with wacko. Come here, my baby. Come let me show you niceness. Caribbean queen, you wine and you look the tightest. Come here, my baby. Come let me show you niceness. Caribbean queen, you wine and you look the tightest. Sweet like a Julie Mango. I just want the taste and jam, yo. I don't want the wine and junk, yo. So come let me slam the bamboo and hear what she have a man to. I don't really care, I have to wind up like a crazy wacko. She man watching with wacko. Come here, my baby. Come let me show you niceness. Caribbean queen, you wine and you look the tightest. Come here, my baby. Come let me show you niceness.
CKUT's annual funding drive is back and taking place from March 15th to 24th, 2024. We have exciting new merch available for our donors, including t-shirts, tote bags, mugs, magnets, and posters. Thanks to the generosity of this year's sponsors, you'll get a chance to win goodies from your favorite local businesses, festivals, and more, with every donation $35 or above. This year's sponsors include Pop Montreal, Cinema Public, Constellation Records, Mutech, Festival du Nouveau Cinéma, Encore Books and Vinyl, RIDM, CNL Cycle, Adam Hart, Just Seeds, Lola Rosa, Putting Edge, Drawn and Quarterly, Death of Vinyl, La Rama, La Seltzer, Dispensaire Microbrasserie, Lou Guillaume, Pizza Bouquet, and Paragraph Bookstore. CKUT would like to thank our sponsors for supporting another year of people-powered community radio. For more details on prizes and to donate, go to ckut.ca/donate.
Go ahead.
Okay, so hello, you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM live from Montreal. I'm Kai and I'm here with Sequoia and we're part of the News Collective. This live show is part of our funding drive. CKUT needs your support. So if you want to contribute, please go to ckut.ca/donate. CKUT is community-driven, corporate-free radio in Montreal and relies on your support to keep going. Every donation gets entered for a chance to win prizes from your favorite local businesses, so don't forget to donate today. Today, we're going to be talking about TA strikes at McGill. We're here with Barry Eidlin, Assistant Professor of Sociology at McGill, who specializes in labor and class relations, and two AXEM representatives, Dallas Jokic, who's a member of the bargaining committee, and Kirsten Van Vliet, who's the TA grievance officer. So let's start with some basics here. AXEM is the Association of Graduate Students Employed at McGill, and this is the labor union that represents teaching assistants, invigilators, and course lecturers. But of course, the center of our discussion today is going to be the roughly 2,500 TAs at McGill.
Yeah, so hey, this is Sequoia. Just to kick off our discussion, so as we've been hearing, or at least as I've been hearing, you know, the murmurs around campus, there is talk of a looming TA strike. And of course, you may have heard rumors, but again, please follow AXEM social media for up-to-date information about, actual information about the strike. And so before we get into the strike conversation, let's just go through some of the basics. So of course, AXEM has been in negotiations with McGill because McGill is the employer. And so both parties kind of need to agree to like the same conditions for them to take effect. And AXEM is threatening to strike if McGill doesn't provide a fair offer. So, you know, we hadn't introduced you guys. Would you guys maybe go around and just say hello? Actually, wait. You did introduce them. I just realized.
Yeah, I introduced them, but they can say hello.
Okay, then you know what? I'll just jump into my first question. Okay. Sorry, I totally forgot about that. So Dallas and Kirsten with AXEM, could you take us back to when these negotiations started with McGill and kind of tell us a bit about the trajectory of the negotiations kind of leading up to this like potential strike or the strike mandate that you guys actually voted on?
Yeah, so Yeah, I'm Dallas. I'm on the bargaining committee for TAs for AgSem, and I'm also a PhD student in the philosophy department. So we've been negotiating with McGill since September. September 21st was the first day of bargaining, and we've been doing it a little bit differently than normal. We're doing something called open bargaining, which means that all members of the union are welcome to attend all sessions, which has been a cool opportunity for people to be sort of part of the process. And it's led to a number of things, including negotiations moving faster than they often have in the past. Last time it took us, what, almost 2 years to negotiate a collective agreement?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And we started in September, and we're already kind of, you know, moving towards the final items. So the way that negotiations usually work is we begin with, like, non-monetary items and then move on to monetary items. So we were discussing in the fall mostly non-monetary items. So the policy on harassment, discrimination, and sexual violence, the right to refuse unsafe work, the hiring lists and information that we get on them, trying to make sure there's no misgendering of our members in the list that we get from McGill, a whole range of issues. And we moved through most of these relatively quickly, though there's still a number of issues on the table, especially related to the article on harassment, discrimination, and sexual violence. But then on December 18th, we presented McGill with our monetary offer. They were not prepared with their own monetary offer. They wanted to counterpropose. And it took them like a month and a half to do so. We met with them in late January. They still did not have a counterproposal ready. It took us getting a strike, scheduling a strike vote on the calendar for us to even get their first monetary offer, and it was an extreme lowball. So our sort of key demands have been an increase in wages to make us competitive with other top schools in Canada. At schools like U of T or Queen's or McMaster's, TAs are making $45 to $50 an hour. We make $33.03 at McGill. We're also fighting for healthcare funds to supplement gaps within the health insurance that graduate students have through PGSS. And we're fighting for indexing TA hours to undergraduate enrollment. So basically, in a lot of departments, we're seeing class sizes are staying the same number of students are enrolled, but we're getting less and less TA hours. In psychology, they just cut all the contracts from 180 hours to 150 hours, which is both, you know, a position for overwork of TAs, and it's a declining quality of education for students. And so from McGill, we've really been seeing little movement. Their offers have remained extremely low on wages, and they have, for the most part, refused to consider anything on indexing TA hours to undergraduate enrollment or on healthcare fund.
And I don't know if this is public information, but just about the wage, like, what can you give us a sense of, like, what they have offered?
Yeah, it is public information.
Okay.
So the first offer we got from McGill, and one other important piece of this puzzle is inflation, right? Like, we've seen such massive inflation, and collective agreements are often having, like, catch up for inflation in the last few years. So in our first counteroffer from McGill, they offered us a 1.25% raise in the first year and 1% for subsequent years for a five-year contract. They didn't budge much from that until we had the strike vote last week. Their latest offer from then on money was a 2.25% raise in the first year and 1.25% in subsequent years. We had our first session with them since the strike vote, so we had an overwhelming strike vote, record participation for the union, and we got an 87.5% strike mandate. And then McGill started to budge a little bit more on numbers, but they're still well below inflation. So the latest offer we have from them in terms of wages is a 4.25% raise in the first year, 2.25% in the second year, and 2% in the third and fourth years of the contract.
Okay.
Okay. And for reference, inflation's like 2.8% right now, but with some prices, it's a lot more.
And in the last year, it's been, you know, times like upwards of 6-7%.
Yeah. That's true as well. So, I did a little bit of reading on wages, and like you were saying, McGill TAs make around $33 an hour from what I could find, and U of T, they make $47 an hour, which is considerably more. Yeah, sorry.
Actually, yeah. Hi, this is Kirsten. TAs at U of T actually now make a little bit more than $51
an
hour. They had a very similar timeline that we're seeing, so they were in negotiations this year. They took a strike mandate. The employer resolved their negotiations at the last minute, avoiding a strike, and the TAs are now earning $51 an hour.
Okay, amazing. Is that something that you would be hoping for here?
$51 an hour?
I'll take it.
Yeah.
McGill's ready to put it on the table.
Well, some people have said that there's a higher cost of living in Toronto, so that is what justifies TAs at somewhere like U of T, for example, being paid more than TAs at McGill. although it seems like a pretty big gap. But Toronto was the 90th most expensive city in the world in 2023, while Montreal was 135th. Quebec, I would say it's fair to say we have lower rent costs than in Toronto. So is it reasonable for McGill's TA's pay to be brought in lines with, to be brought in line with more expensive cities like Toronto? How do we sort of reconcile that? And are we aiming for as high as, you know, $51 that they have in Toronto, or are we aiming for some sort of middle ground between that?
Yeah, so it's true that the cost of living in Toronto is more expensive than Montreal. It's a lot closer in a lot of other places, like Queens. Like, I lived in Kingston. Yeah. It's pretty comparable cost of living in Kingston to Montreal, especially now. Like, the catch-up, like, the Montreal is getting more expensive faster than any other major city in Canada. So, and with the recent changes to the rent laws, like, everything is just getting more expensive and more expensive. True. So I think that what we've been is what we've been pushing for is not necessarily we need to get the identical wage of U of T, but we want some kind of plan to catch us up with other top schools in Canada. McGill is like considers itself one of the top schools in the country, one of the top schools in the world, the Harvard of the North, when they are recruiting new students and doing public facing things. But when it comes to paying its TAs, they don't want to hear any of it. So I think that the goal is really a fair wage to get a catch up plan. But we want a contract that suits like our specific needs of members, and those needs are a lot of our members are living well below the poverty line. $33.03 an hour might sound okay, but in the context of graduate student work, where those wages are meant to in many ways subsidize the research that we do, in many, many departments, students are having to make tough decisions like skipping meals, not affording groceries, having to move because they can no longer afford their rent. And so within the context of grad student life, the wages are just one piece of the picture of people really, really struggling to get by.
And how many hours do TAs work on average, usually?
So the sort of standard contract at McGill is 180 hours, but there's a for a semester. But there's a range. There's courses that are less, and as we talked about, in many departments, they're cutting these pretty frequently.
And I will say that there are some departments that sort of cut the 180-hour position in half, and they've made 90 hours a standard contract. So I'll go into the department, they'll be like, yeah, I have one TA ship, it's 90 hours. It's like, well, you know, a TA ship is sort of max 180 hours because of an old rule with graduate and postdoctoral studies to respect old Tri-Council award rules about the number of hours graduate students can work. And that's sort of like a vestigial trait of our contract that the cap is 180 hours. Contracts can be as low as 45 or even lower than that, depending on the requirements for the course. So it's really varied.
Wow, yeah, and if you're doing 180 hours at $33 an hour, that's like $5,500 a semester. If you're making like $11K per year to finance an education, you know, that's not enough. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, outside of the wage increase and some of the, you know, items, specific items that you're negotiating with McGill for, what else is at stake here? You know, like, can we talk about maybe the quality of education and make the undergraduate experience? Like, what are kind of like the surrounding factors that are at play here?
Yeah, so the quality of education is a big issue on the bargaining table at the moment. So as I mentioned, a lot of departments are cutting hours. It's really frequent. There's a worry from TA sides that even if we get a raise, they're just going to cut contracts so people won't actually see the raise. And the consequences of that are not just on the TA's life, but also on the quality of education for students. Mm. When we've brought up this issue of trying to create a mechanism that prevents the cutting of TA hours, McGill has said, well, you know, we don't want to put any restrictions because we might want to switch classes to multiple choice questions, to automated grading, to not leaving comments on papers. And this is one of the problems we want to address, right? We know as educators and students know as students that getting qualitative, rich feedback, getting one-on-one conversations with your teaching assistants is an essential part of your education. And when TA hours are cut, it's not just bad for TAs, it's also really bad for students. Hmm. And McGill has proposed their new budget. They're making sure that the salaries of top administrators stay at the exact same rate. And education isn't always the priority, it seems. So one of the real demands that we have at the table, and one thing that we've been spending a lot of time talking about recently, is how do we solve this problem of TAs being overworked and also being unable to give the adequate attention to their students. Like, TAs are often having to close their office hours door when there's still a line out the door. Mm. They're being instructed to not give comments on papers because they don't have time. It's all connected to the problem of the quality of education.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there's also an argument to be made about the academic freedom of professors to design courses that they want. We're constantly told by this institution to create innovative assignments, to give feedback that will be like ipsative, you know, like ipsative types of learning instead of just, you know, a multiple choice test. And you can't do that without teaching resources. So as someone who's also designed and taught three courses as a course lecturer now, there's that part of the puzzle too. It's not just students who are suffering, it's professors that are affected in the planning they can do for their own courses.
Let's say that the union does go on strike to put pressure on McGill. What's that going to look like for TAs, and what does a strike stop TAs from doing? I mean, working in general, right? But
now that TAs have legally voted to go on strike, and should that strike mandate be exercised and called by the bargaining committee, all TA work must stop. Everything that is listed on the TA workload form, any emails, any marking, any conferences, any labs, any work for the position legally must stop. And it's a majority decision that is taken by the bargaining unit. And this is just how it operates under Quebec law. So now that mandate has been passed, and should a strike be called, it's just immediate and everybody is covered under that.
Yeah, actually, like, great follow-up, great segue. I just wanted to ask about some of the technicalities of striking and the law, you know, as it relates to Quebec's labor code. So if EXIM, I know you guys have a strike mandate, but if you call for a strike, what is the deal with scabbing here? I think there's been a lot of conversations, especially like amongst students. And, you know, maybe if you could just clarify what scabbing means. And I guess my question for you is, could TAs scab if they wanted to? This is a question I'm hearing from students a lot. And I know that Quebec has, you know, fairly strong anti-scabbing legislation. Professor Ireland, if you wanted to, like, jump in here and maybe speak further to this broader historical context, you know, like, how did that become legislation in the first place, and why is it important? Just kind of, like, clarifying this for our listeners.
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. It's good to meet the EXIM people. Quebec is one of two provinces, or two jurisdictions, because we also have to include the federal jurisdiction in Canada, that have anti-scab legislation. Mm. And what that means is that it's prohibited for an employer to bring in people to do work that would otherwise be done by the workers who are part of the bargaining unit that's on strike. Quebec is the pioneer in this legislation. It has existed on the books in Quebec since 1978.
Oh, wow.
British Columbia is the other that enacted in 1993. The Manitoba government is currently preparing. There's a new NDP government that was elected late last year, and one of their promises was to enact this. And then on February 27th, I believe, the Canadian House of Commons unanimously voted for anti-scab legislation. So even Pierre Poilievre voted for anti-scab legislation. So this is part, so I guess one thing is to understand this is sort of part of a growing consensus in Canada in the labor relations sphere that scabbing is detrimental to the collective bargaining process.
Yeah.
So it's not, and so it's under, it's important to understand why Quebec implemented this. So it was a Parti Québécois government, René Lévesque's government, that implemented this law in 1978. But it wasn't out of trying to, it wasn't because they were these like radical leftists that wanted to, you know, prop up the, you know, wanted to give a boost to their friends in the labor movement. It was because they recognized after a series of violent strikes in Quebec, most notably the Robin Hood Mill strike in 1977, where there were people who were shot on the picket line, but but there are also strikes at United Aircraft. There was a strike at La Presse, the Common Front strike, which all involved significant amounts of violence. And the Canadian, or the Quebec government, sorry, recognized that the presence of scabs in the strike situation was detrimental to allowing the parties to reach agreement, and instead had the effect of prolonging the strike and undermining the ability to reach agreement. And so that's why they implemented these laws in 1978, and they've remained on the books since. And that's also why in Canada, as of 2015, the Canadian Supreme Court issued a decision in Saskatchewan Federation of Labor versus Saskatchewan that declared that the right to strike is a fundamental right of Canadian workers across Canada. And the right to join a union, the right to engage in collective bargaining, and the right to strike are fundamental constitutional charter-protected rights for all Canadian workers. And it's because I think we need to take... Because I think that what's important to understand here is the role of strikes in the broader collective bargaining relationship. And the purpose of collective bargaining is to reach an agreement on a variety of things related to the working conditions, wages, that kind of thing that affect workers. And the reason that strikes factor into this is because the collective bargaining relationship is inherently involves an unequal power balance, power imbalance.
Interesting, yeah.
Where employers have all sorts of structural power advantages over the workers that they employ. And in order to level the playing field and have an equitable bargaining process that can actually reach a bargaining agreement, it's important that workers also have certain levers at their disposal to exert pressure on the employer. Otherwise, you're left with this unequal power imbalance and you're not able to actually address the underlying problems in the workplace. And so the fundamental ultimate power that workers have is to withdraw their labor. And the purpose of that withdrawal of labor is to create pressure on the employer to compel them to come to the bargaining table and reach an agreement. And so that's what we're seeing here. And so that's why there's this ratcheting up of pressure, right? That, you know, you take a strike you set a strike authorization date, you take a strike authorization vote, you then exert a strike, you might have a limited strike at certain, you know, we saw that with the Front Commun in December, right? And the goal here is to ratchet up the pressure on the employer to reach agreement. And that's the important thing to keep in mind here.
So what kind of action can be taken against TAs who would cross the picket lines?
Well, I'm not an expert on labor law, but in general, like, the no TAs will be paid for any work they do while TAs are on strike, and it would also be illegal to do that work. So all TA payment will stop if a strike happens. So anyone who would be trying to scab would be scabbing for free and would also make themselves vulnerable to, violation of the labor code.
I will also say that McGill will not want to open themselves up to this liability. So they will really not, even if there is a TA out there in the world who would like to work for free. I have other things I would say to you if you want to work for free, but let's say you really like your job, as most of us do, and you really care about your students and you really want to support your professor. McGill is warning professors not to allow TAs to work because this opens themselves up to liability because we have the really strong anti-scab laws on the books here. So I think that even in the case where somebody might want to scab themselves, I don't think they will be allowed to.
So when you say liability, you mean being sued?
Exactly.
And who would be that would be you who would sue them? Or
me personally, yes.
Would it be AXEM?
It would be AXEM.
Okay, right.
Yes.
Okay, and so it seems like this is pretty airtight. Are there any loopholes or ways that McGill might be able to get around TAs going on strike, sort of keeping it within this sort of like the TA sphere, not trying to, we'll talk about professors and what roles they might have to pick up later.
Yeah. Okay. There are a number of ways that McGill has tried to anticipate and sort of mitigate any effects of a labor stoppage of TAs. We'll talk about professors because that's a much more complex question, but there are other employees at the university right now, such as graders and course tutors and undergraduate course assistants who do very similar work as a teaching assistant. So similar, in fact, we want to unionize them. So you can, if I can plug, you can sign a union card at www.xm.ca/join, because a lot of these workers are doing the same work as a TA for minimum wage.
Wow.
It's also very clear in the law with 109.1G that if these graders were hired at the beginning of the semester, mm-hmm. before there were any real inklings of a strike, they would be able to, if TAs go on strike, they would be able to continue their work, but they wouldn't be able to do more than has been established practice. Mm-hmm. And again, this is something that the union will be following up on. And again, McGill is, when you read their FAQs, they're highly aware of this, that they can't hire more people, but they can use existing employees in ways that have been established this semester.
Yeah, actually, I just want to follow up on that. So this morning, I saw that McGill had thrown up a FAQ page kind of about just like a FAQ for instructors and just a FAQ about kind of the strike. And I mean, to me, that indicates that they're, you know, anticipating a strike and like anticipating how they're going to be kind of like doing business throughout this strike. And so they say that, no, you can't hire on new people. Like, you can't hire new graders because that would be scabbing. But they did kind of have this, they were like, but managers can do work. And they're kind of saying, actually, the grading falls on the responsibility of professors. And so I'm sensing like there's conflicting information coming from McGill, coming from EXIM, coming from the law. And so I'm wondering like how you parse that language and mm-hmm. what you make of like, you know, what would be considered scabbing and what would be considered not scabbing.
I'll jump in. And I think then Barry probably has things that he would add, but, there's conflicting information even within the same FAQ that McGill is providing. And I think the question we have to ask here is, who is a manager?
Mm.
And the union has a different position here than the university. Managers under the law are involved in hiring and firing employees. Professors can, you know, when TAs apply for a job in a hiring unit in a department, they apply to a pool of jobs, and professors can say, like, oh, I would prefer to have that TA or not, or whatever.
Not really.
Sometimes not even. You don't even get much of a choice. Yeah. But it's really the chair that is involved in the hiring and firing decisions.
Mm.
So the chair is the manager. So the chair would be the one, we believe, our position to get the grading.
And what's McGill's position?
Well, Barry, maybe you can talk about how McGill has been framing this towards professors.
The way they're framing it for us is that we as professors, as long as we are hired before July 31st, 2023, do count as managers. And they list a whole bunch of different functions. So the position's been evolving. So they initially were saying that the job, the work done by our TAs consists of part of our quote-unquote normal faculty duties, and that that we are responsible for all the evaluation involved with all of our courses and our course design and all the instruction, and then we just happen to have these helpful TAs that sort of do this stuff for us normally, but in the event that they are not available for whatever reason, it's still our responsibility to cover all this work. In this recent FAQ that they have come out with, they have sort of, they initially were saying that academics are not managers. Now they are saying that we do count as managers because we have authority over how to direct the work of our TAs. We have we can assign them certain tasks, and we can supervise them in different ways, and that this makes us, and so the hiring firing thing is just one criteria of many, and we satisfy all these other criteria, and therefore as managers we are entitled and indeed ordered to do the work of normally done by TAs in the event of a strike.
Yeah, and just to clarify, sorry, I feel like I kind of jumped into that question without contextualizing enough. So I just want to read off McGill's actual FAQ. They say, managers can do the work normally done by TAs on strike if employed at the university on the date that the negotiations began. So like before, as Professor Eidlin mentioned before, July 31st. So just to clarify our discussion, it seems like there's some ambiguity around whether the manager actually has jurisdiction, like in the law. Is that kind of like
where we're at right now? There's this open question. And, you know, and so basically what McGill is doing is that they are sort of asserting this, that this is the case when the case law is actually far from settled on the matter. And there was a conflicting legal opinion that was issued by a labor law firm that was commissioned by MAUT, the McGill Association of University Teachers, which is not a union, it's a professional association, but part of the Canadian Association of University Teachers. And they pointed out that this question is far from settled and that there is a very good argument to be made that professors are not, well, first of all, that the work that we do that the work that TAs do is not part of our normal faculty duties and that professors are not managers.
Okay, so I read recently in a Montreal Gazette article that lawyers representing the professors in the education faculty believe that the added grading responsibility to professors would violate Quebec labor laws and sent a cease and desist letter to the university on Friday. That's a quote.
Yes.
This seems to be a bit of a sticking point, seeing as McGill and Axon seem to have conflicting views on this. So maybe the law's a bit fuzzy. One question that I had on your point was if there is sort of a disagreement about the law or how to interpret the law, and maybe litigation even on that going forward, how should the university proceed in the short term?
Well, the way the university is going to proceed is by implementing their plan.
Right.
The way that, so the education faculty, the faculty at the Faculty of Education recently decided to unionize, and their case is before the, is being administered by the Labor Tribunal, the recognition, they're going through their processes, they have already been recognized by the Labor Tribunal, and McGill is appealing the decision just as they did with the law professors. And so it's a slightly different case in the case of the Faculty of Education because they already are a bargaining unit. And so what they are arguing is that this constitutes a unilateral change in their working conditions after the certification process. So even though their recognition case is not fully resolved because McGill is appealing it, there are laws that regulate how employers can and cannot change working conditions after the certification process has been...
Article 59 of the Labor Code.
Yes, and so that's what they are arguing, is that this forcing professors to do the work of their TAs is a unilateral change in their working conditions that's being implemented after they have filed for certification and is therefore illegal. In other faculties, we are not subject to that because we have not filed for certification or anything like that. We are not unionized. And so it still remains an open question for us whether we are, in fact, whether this is part of our normal work duties and whether or not we are managers. But it cannot be construed as a unilateral change in working conditions after the certification process has already been started.
Right. So the unionized McGill professors, the faculties are education.
And law.
And law. And nothing else.
And nothing else.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
And so I think what's going to have to happen here, and to be frank, like if so contrary to what's in the FAQ, where the administration is very declarative on this, that, you know, this is the policy, this is our position, when you actually ask them in meetings, as I have, is this a settled question? Their answer is, this is our position. We recognize that this is going to have to be resolved by the Quebec Labor Tribunal. So it's going to have to happen, essentially, in the event of a strike, is, professors either will be grading and AGSEM will file a grievance with the Labor Tribunal, or, individual professors could claim that they are being enlisted to be complicit in McGill's efforts to violate Quebec labor law and file a complaint with the Labor Tribunal. So, and then that would resolve and then the tribunal would be tasked with resolving these core questions.
Hmm. And I will say that one of the difficulties and what we read in this legal decision commissioned by the MAUT is that if there's a coordinated response among professors who are not unionized, independently, people could come to the same conclusion, as I think I've been seeing and receiving emails to that effect, mostly anonymous, because people are very afraid of being pursued by the employer. But if there's a coordinated effort on behalf of unionized professors, McGill could come after these professors for saying this is an illegal
strike.
I see. Yeah, so
on behalf of professors. Our strike, if there's one, would be legal.
Yes.
Yeah, so do you have a sense of how non-unionized professors are feeling about their potential, work load that's going to be increased? Because it kind of seems like to me McGill's position is you're going to have to, to the professors, you're going to have to take on the grading. Say you're in a class of 600 people, they're kind of that's their stated position. And so we see from the unionized professors that there's, they have issue and that they're using their power as a union to kind of push back against that. But what is the sense? Do you have any sense of how the non-unionized professors are feeling? Are they going to be kind of an adversary to McGill, or are they kind of in fear? How are they? How do you feel they're going to be reacting to this?
I can just say from what I've seen and from the people who have been trying to consult with AGSEM, just trying to understand, because they get the sense from the FAQs that McGill has sent around and the one that is now public, that they're being misled or the full amount of information is not available to them, and they feel like they might even be opening themselves up to personal liability, and they're very worried about that. I would just say there's a lot of confusion, a lot of worry on behalf of professors. I've seen some course...
Which is what the administration wants, by the way.
Exactly. I've seen a lot of course supervisors just expressing concern for undergraduate students, expressing concern for their graduate students, just trying to figure out how to navigate this and sort of, I would say, really suffering from a lack of leadership and care from the upper administration. Leadership here doesn't mean fall in line with what we say. Leadership means giving people, the information to make, appropriate choices according to their own conscience. But of course, that's in this labor dispute, McGill, of course, wants to mitigate any effects of the TA strike. So this is the consequence of that, is a lot of confusion, a lot of fear.
And I'll add that, this is a complicated question. We're going back and forth on all these, legal cases and different interpretations of labor law. One of the things that's very striking from the perspective of the bargaining committee is that McGill seems to be putting a lot more work into trying to undermine the power of a strike and so confusion among people in the university community than actually putting forward a deal that we could accept.
Right.
We were in the bargaining room from 9 a.m. to about 6 p.m. on Tuesday at the Ministry of Labor. We're in conciliation. And when we asked McGill about their numbers and what their update was going to be, they told us they were unable to reach the people that could confirm the numbers. This is in the first session we had after this overwhelming strike mandate. And the people who make the calls and are able to authorize a deal that we could accept are unreachable. And so I think it's quite striking to me where the priorities are. McGill seems much more interested in undermining a strike than in averting it by providing a deal that TAs deserve.
Yeah. And what I've been telling my colleagues, because I think that there's, you know, that what the university is trying to do with this FAQ document and others is to sort of present themselves as sort of the defenders of students' right to an education, and that we need to sort of protect students and allow them to graduate on time and protect the students who are vulnerable because of visa issues and that kind of thing. And that, you know, the strike is going to undermine this. And I want to bring it back to what I was saying earlier about the purpose of strikes within a collective bargaining process, and that the purpose of a strike is to compel the employer to get back to the bargaining table and reach agreement. And so anything that serves to undermine that power to compel the employer back to the bargaining table is actually undermining the collective bargaining process, undermining the ability to reach an agreement, and ultimately undermining undergraduate education. And so what I tell people is that, you know, if and my colleagues, because they're obviously concerned about their students, like, you know, what about these students? You know, like, should I just grade the ones that are, you know, graduating or something like that, you know? And what I say is that, you know, McGill administration has a very easy solution to the problem of graduating students and vulnerable students with visa issues, and that's to reach an agreement. Right. And anything that lifts or mitigates the pressure that they are feeling to reach an agreement is reducing the likelihood that they're going to reach that agreement. And so it's actually in undergraduate students' interests to have McGill feel the full brunt of that pressure. And that's actually what's going to resolve this issue.
Wow. Dallas and Kirsten, it sounds like we're not necessarily very optimistic about the prospect of McGill offering a fair deal.
They can call us anytime.
We're ready. We're waiting to hear from them, honestly. And, we've made it very clear to them what kind of deal we need to avert a strike. It is something they can afford. It is something they can do. It is something they're dragging their heels on.
Right.
And we've shown a lot more flexibility on our side than we've seen from McGill. And so we are ready to make a deal anytime. We are happy. We've told McGill we can stay until 3 a.m. We can meet every day this week. We can do what it takes. But they need to make sure that they can reach the people with the decision-making power when we're in the room. Because it's been very frustrating to see that they don't really seem to be taking the negotiations as seriously as they're taking trying to undermine a strike.
And I want to actually add something to that, because what Dallas is describing is a very common dynamic in collective bargaining more generally, right? That it's almost invariably the case that employers drag their feet try to delay reaching agreement. And that's why, you know, policymakers in Canada over the past 80 years, as our labor relations regime has evolved, have come to recognize, and this has been a learning process, been a very tough learning process that's involved a lot of strikes, a lot of conflict, people dying, people, you know, a lot of violence. And the lesson that policymakers, and again, I'm not talking, these are not like radical lefty people. These are just, you know, pretty boring, mundane policymaker people, recognize that a key to a healthy collective bargaining system is a system that provides mechanisms that can actually put the thumb on the scale for the workers somewhat, that you actually need to somewhat, you need to have mechanisms to compel employers to come to the bargaining table. And that absent that compulsion, that employers, other things being equal, will have a tendency not to want to reach agreement and to drag out the bargaining process. Because every day that they can drag out the bargaining process is another day that the status quo stays in place. It's another day that wages remain at their current levels. It's another day that, you know, ongoing, you know, workplace conflicts and issues about scheduling and overwork and forced overtime and all that kind of stuff remain unaddressed. And so every day that they can drag things out is another day that the current status quo that tends to be more in their favor stays in place. And right. So that's why you need to compel them to actually come to the bargaining table.
So this kind of connects to my next question, which is, so basically my parents are professors at York University, and there's also an impending TA strike there.
There's an ongoing one.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Okay.
It's and not impending.
What they were telling me was that the university is trying to pressure them to end the school year early so that the effects of the strike won't be felt. And I know that we have basically 6 weeks left in the semester. So is there any possibility of McGill being able to do something similar like that here, dragging their heels, delaying, or circumventing things for the next month and a half so that the effects of the strike won't be felt? And how are we anticipating that?
I don't know within the university statutes how they could, I'm not saying it's not possible, but I simply do not know how they could end a school year early. Like the scheduling decisions are made years in advance.
Right, yeah.
And this is a very large, like a city-sized community here, and it's very slow moving to make changes. So I don't know. There's also... Within our own context, like York, like CUPE 3903, which is the union that is on strike currently, has a long history of labor struggle at York. And I would say that this strike is the first... Well, there have been smaller strikes. There was a floor fellow strike a few years ago. But I feel... that this is the first time in maybe over a decade at McGill that we're seeing a real disruptive strike on the horizon here. So I don't know if McGill has it in their toolbox to be able to move that quickly as maybe York is sort of anticipating this type of struggle every time they get to this point of negotiations with QP 3903.
Yeah. Yeah, so we are going to take a very short song break. It was selected by our wonderful guest today. Would any of you guys like to say a little bit about the song Solidarity Forever by Pete Seeger? Why you chose this song?
Well, this is a classic labor anthem and one that we sang outside the HR building at our first day of negotiations of 2024. And apparently they could hear it from the top floors.
Oh, lovely. Okay, so...
And it's not by... It's performed by Pete Seeger. Written by Pete Seeger.
Who is it written by?
Well, it's written by Ralph Chapin, who was an organizer with the Industrial Workers of the World in 1912. And it's based on an old... Well, it's based on an old religious anthem, but then it's a Civil War... reworking of it called John Brown's Body after the sort of abolitionist insurrectionist, and Ralph Chapin rewrote the lyrics in the early 1912 to make it a labor anthem, and Pete Seeger sort of has the most famous rendition of it, but it's sung in union halls all around the world.
Amazing. Wow. This is exactly why I love having professors in the studio. Okay, this is Solidarity Forever.
Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
It is we who plow the the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving mid the wonders we have made, but the Union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
Taken untold millions that they never toiled to earn, but without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the Union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
In our hands is placed a power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of atoms magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the Union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
Hello, we are back. You are listening to CKUT. Oh, sorry about that. Don't mind that. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. CKUT is currently doing its funding drive, so please, please, please donate to this amazing radio station. You can donate at ckut.ca/donate. Every cent, every dollar matters. And yeah, we are. If you're just tuning in now, we're having a conversation about the looming TA strike at McGill with some AgSem members and Professor Barry Eidlin. So we'll get back into it.
Yeah. I just want to talk about the end of the term. So should students expect significant disruptions as we near the end of the school year? Especially, I know, for students that are graduating, it's a big concern. Sequoia, yeah. You're graduating.
Right? I am, yeah.
And so...
Trembling in my bones.
Yeah, so what kinds of effects... what's going to be the effect of this strike on students and undergrads?
Well, I would say it's really up to McGill. TAs do a lot of essential work to make education happen at McGill. And as I've talked about, a lot of our demands have to do with protecting the quality of education. A strike will be massively disruptive for everyone in the McGill community. So the hope is that we can avert one or end one very quickly. And the decision for that really lies with McGill. So I would say people will be expecting a lot of disruption if the TA strike goes forward. But whether or not it goes forward is really in McGill's hands at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I guess I just wanted to ask kind of a broad question. I know we touched on this a little bit at the beginning, but just, you know, where does this TA strike kind of fit in the landscape of labor union organizing across universities in Canada and also just across Canada at large? You know, like we recently, York University is on strike right now, and we saw the massive public sector strikes. You know, like what can you say about kind of the state of labor organizing across Canada and where this fits?
Do you want me to handle that?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is definitely part of sort of a labor moment that's not just here in Canada, but across the board in the U.S. as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you want to talk about a wildfire. I mean, higher education organizing in the U.S. has just been going off the charts in the past couple of years. And there's been massive unionization campaigns and massive victories at places like MIT, Northwestern, University of Chicago, Dartmouth, the list goes on. Even undergraduates organizing their campus workers. But here in Canada as well, you know, there's been at Carleton and a few other places. So, and like you said, the Franc-Commerce strikes. So, you know, we're coming. I've been pestering the I've been pestering the Canada labor program, the people who compile the official strike statistics, mm-hmm. to get me the current numbers for 2023, because they haven't compiled them yet, but they have promised me that they will get them by next week. Mm. But my estimates are that this is going to be the largest number of people on strike in 2023. The second largest number ever recorded in Canadian history, wow. after 1976. Wow. I'm not sure on that, so don't quote me, but there's this whole series of events that are sort of leading to this moment that we're seeing. Hmm. And they certainly play into what's happening here at McGill, right? And I think that there's this sort of broader, so the number one thing is this broader trend of declining working conditions and stagnating wages that has affected workers across Canada over the past 40 years. And then the pandemic is the second factor, which sort of crystallized a lot of these. They didn't create this issue, but sort of crystallized this a lot of these key issues in the workplace issues, and particularly this sort of contradiction that people faced of these essential workers being declared to be essential heroes, but then treated as disposable. And that sort of was this moment of reckoning for a lot of people. And then coming out of the pandemic, you know, we had this tighter labor market that to a certain extent increased workers' bargaining power, because they were harder to replace. When you increase workers' replacement costs, they can ask for more, and they will often get more. And then as this wave of strikes started happening, there was the federal workers here in Canada in April of last year, that was 155,000 workers. Mm-hmm. That was a big thing. But there was, this sort of, as it started to get momentum and we started talking about hot labor summer and that kind of stuff, there's this sort of almost, you can call it a contagion effect, right? Where more workers are saying, okay, we see where this becomes part of people's frame of reference. Like, this is something that I can do, right? If you're in a frame of reference where strikes are rare and often hard fought and often lose, the idea that you can or should go on strike is just much less of a thing. It's just not something that's going to occur to you as a course of action, and you're much more likely to just resort to individual things of just keeping your head down, working harder, trying to negotiate with your boss individually, whatever. But if you're in this context where there's many more people going on strike, it's in the news, and you see people winning, all of a sudden it's just much more of a possibility. And so I think that that's been driving a lot of what we've seen and why we're seeing so many strikes in Canada. And, obviously the issues are different from place to place, and there's different issues here at McGill, but but we're certainly not immune from those broader trends.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we only have 2 minutes left. Yeah. So if anyone wants to jump in really quickly, I think Kai will ask the last question.
Oh, well, I was just going to ask about the precedent of TA strikes at McGill, if there's any precedent here, because we were talking about, the duties of professors versus TAs and that. And so if anyone could comment on that.
Yeah, we actually have, for our 30th anniversary of AgSem, which was last year, we have a historical project that we completed.
Nice.
And you can look at it at www.agsem.ca/history. Actually, TAs at McGill went on an illegal strike in the 1970s to get, they didn't have a union at that time.
Oh, wow.
Because we're only 30 years old last year. Didn't have a union at that time, but it brought McGill back to the table to negotiate an increase in wages, because some TAs at that time were earning about $2 an hour when you factor in.
That's crazy.
The last strike that AgSem had was in 2015. It was a one-day strike. TAs voted to go on a one-day strike, and then, there was another assembly. Do we go on a strike again? That was rejected, but McGill's latest offer was also rejected. So that was like a complete evacuation of all any bargaining power, right? So if you reject the employer's offer, but then you also reject going on strike, then you don't really have any power left at the negotiation table. There are other strikes that have been really consequential for AgSem, and I invite you to look on our website.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I guess, okay, we do have one more minute left. Let's say McGill waits out the 8-week strike. What happens?
well, then it's summer. Then it's summer, and negotiations then won't be finished, and we will reevaluate as our team and look at what's possible and what we can win at the negotiation table.
Amazing. Thank you so much again to our for joining us today. This is a great conversation, and remember to follow up on AgSim's social medias for more updates. Okay, thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Bye-bye.
Construit à la hauteur de